Hello, and welcome to Mental Health Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lang, and I'm here with Dr. Mark Burton. In this podcast, we will talk about all things mental health. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey guys, Liz Lang here with Dr. Mark Burton, and this week we're going to get into analyzing anxiety. But before we do that, we had a listener email us. This is listener Jessica, and we always appreciate any listener feedback that we get. And Jessica brought up something that we felt that it was important for Mark and I to address. She said that in her experience, she was taking an antidepressant and a stimulant like Adderall, and stopping the medication can induce a withdrawal effect and can potentially be dangerous. Her experience was that she went into a full-blown depressive episode. And so she did say something that I think is the main point, is that she wants listeners to really be aware of talking to their provider before stopping any medication. And Mark will agree that is definitely right. A good idea.
And we neglected to say that. And I think this came in our episode when we were talking about ADHD. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about how I had seen a real improvement in a lot of people when they started taking a stimulant. Mm-hmm. But it is always a good idea to talk with your provider before you start or stop a medication. I think the one thing I thought about additionally, I've always talked to pharmacists. I think pharmacists have an amazing wealth of knowledge about the medication. And I'll go out on a limb here and I'll say sometimes I think they know more than the physicians do as far as interactions what it does, because that's their thing. That's all they focus on. And so I'm not saying substitute the pharmacist for the doctor.
Right.
But if you ever have questions about interactions or getting on a medication or off a medication, I think a pharmacist is a great source of information. Anyway, thank you, Jessica, for bringing that up and pointing that out to us. It's always a good idea to talk to your doctor.
I agree. Yes. And she does state that taking the medication was a miracle for her. So she is a licensed social worker who provides therapy for children. And she said it's been a miracle for her and improved all areas of her life. So medications definitely can be a positive thing, but always talk to your doctor, because therapists, they will recommend medications. They cannot prescribe them unless they are a psychiatrist. We've talked about. Okay, so on to anxiety. And we've broke down depression before. And so I thought it would be a good idea to kind of shift gears and talk a little bit about anxiety. They are very different, and there definitely tends to be a correlation. Oftentimes you hear anxiety and depression really intermixed, but there are times when they are separate. There are people who have just depression, and there are people who have just anxiety. So let's start with just talking about what anxiety is.
So it's a good question, and I'll give you, my definition, how I explain it to clients. But before I do that, you brought up the connection between depression and anxiety, which I think is often there, not always, but it's often there. And one of the ways that I conceptualize it, which has been, and this has been true for a lot of clients that I see, is anxiety feels so overwhelming to a lot of people, and they feel like there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah.
And they feel really stuck, because even the medications, which we aren't going to talk about really today, the medications for anxiety, either they're really addictive or they don't work. Mm-hmm. And so I think that a lot of people feel helpless when they have those anxiety attacks, which I think then leads to them feeling depressed. That's what I think is a major connection between depression and anxiety. Now, it's true they can have depression about other issues, but I think I've said on the podcast before that the common theme that I see in people who are depressed is a sense that all or part of their life is out of their control. And for me, that fits with that idea of anxiety. I can't do anything about this. It's awful. I have these panic attacks maybe, or I'm anxious, or I can't go to a party. I can't go outside, and it feels overwhelming. So I think that's what the connection is. Just so we have terms correctly, I think of anxiety as the physical manifestation of the mental component, which is fear or worry.
Okay.
And so that emotional component is the fear or worry. But whenever I talk about anxiety, it's about what are the physical manifestations of anxiety. And so if you think about it, it is, oh, there are a lot of people describe it in a lot of ways. Being restless, difficulty concentrating, irritability. Here are some of the physical ones. Increased heart rate, sweating, shaking, shortness of breath. The way they breathe, like I will ask them, okay, where do you feel your anxiety is a question that I'll often start with. And there are a couple of main places. One is shoulders. We keep it tense. The other big one is chest. My chest is tight. And I think that comes from the breathing, which we'll talk about in a bit. Stomach is another one. And then back. And so those are common areas. It can be others, but those are common areas. Those are that's the physical manifestation of the anxiety, like numbness, fear of choking, like you're choking. Rapid heart rate. I think I've mentioned before also, I will always check with someone who is anxious. I'll ask, what are you taking in? For instance, caffeine, energy drinks, things like that, anything that's going to ramp them up. I've had occasion where someone came in and said, I'm just having these, you know, severe anxiety attacks. And it turns out their, you know, their coffee intake is way high. And they're on top of that, they're doing energy drinks and then they're doing pre-workout drinks as well. And so, you know, when you point out to them that there's this incredible amount of caffeine that they're taking in, it makes sense. So you do have to think about what it is you're putting in your body that might lead you to feel anxious. And, you know, so the heart rate, if you think about the heart rate and the breathing, your brain, let's say your brain doesn't know that your body is reacting that way because you had too much coffee this morning. And so it feels just the same. And so, yes, my heart rate's going to go up. I might start to feel jittery. I might have the sensation of being afraid. Because that's what our body does. And so I think it's really important to be aware.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this a lot before. Mental health, it might be happening inside your brain, but that doesn't mean there aren't physical manifestations of mental illnesses such as anxiety, depression. There are very, very often physical manifestations, which is why it's so important to talk about it and to destigmatize it. So last week we talked about meditation and how meditation is really good for stress. And you brought up a really interesting point that stress and anxiety actually increases our productivity to a certain point. So let's kind of talk about that, because sometimes I think people maybe are feeling stressed and really they're feeling anxiety, but they're mislabeling it, or perhaps it's the opposite. Maybe they're thinking, oh my, I have anxiety, when really they're just stressed about something.
Right. So we're only audio, but I always describe this curve, and maybe I can describe it pretty well. On one axis, you have anxiety that is on the bottom axis, the horizontal axis, and anxiety increases. And then on the vertical axis, you have, let's call it productivity increases. And so it's a pretty well-known curve that as your anxiety increases, your productivity also increases until you hit this point where the anxiety becomes too much and it almost paralyzes you, and then your productivity takes a nosedive and goes back down. And one of the ways I've helped people to understand that, let's say you're in college and you have a test and you have no anxiety or no stress about the test, then that might lead you to not study for the test. So what's going to happen? You know, you're not going to do well. And so that's a case of where some stress and some anxiety is helpful. It helps us to be productive because it gets us motivated. It gets us moving. And, and so that's how I describe that curve of the interaction between productivity and anxiety. So a little bit is good. You just want it to be, I call it that sweet spot, you know, in that first part of the curve. You want it to always stay there. And then where people really have difficulty is when the anxiety gets too high and they become unproductive or paralyzed.
Right. So, for example, you know this test is coming up and you've studied for it, but you still feel like you're panicking about it. That would be an example of unproductive anxiety.
Right.
And again, we've talked a lot about how we're believers in medication, but it needs to be a last resort. I think there are so many wonderful ways that you can cope with anxiety before resorting to medication. And I think the number one that you're probably going to say is going to be meditation, what we
meditation.
Talked about last week.
Well, it's the big three that we've talked about, meditation, mm-hmm. exercise, and sleep. I'm fairly negative. I'm going to own my bias. I have a bias mm-hmm. against mm-hmm. medication for anxiety, and here's the reason why. If you get a true, what I call a true anxiolytic, which is something like Valium. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with that, it certainly takes away your anxiety. It doesn't address the reasons that you might be anxious. So you're just covering up the problem. The difficulty with something like Valium is it's very addictive. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually hard. I think this is good. It's hard to find a doctor who will give that prescription.
Yeah.
So what I want listeners to be aware of, and again, this is my bias against things like antidepressants, that in, let's say, the past 10 years, it used to be antidepressants were for depression. And then all of a sudden it appeared, oh, let's say that they're for anxiety as well. And so you'll find that doctors will prescribe antidepressants saying this will help your anxiety. Again, I don't have a big pool of data. My clients who do that have never reported that it changes the anxiety.
Interesting.
That the antidepressant does not help the anxiety. So I agree with what you said, that I think there are things that you can do before you resort to medication that are more effective without the side effects. Mm-hmm. And so I strongly suggest that meditation, good sleep, and exercise. I want to acknowledge that we're going to talk about anxiety in more of a general way, but just acknowledge there are five different, well, let's call them anxiety disorders that people mm-hmm. may be familiar with. And probably the most common anxiety disorder that gets diagnosed in counseling office would be what we call generalized anxiety mm-hmm. disorder. Often people refer to it by its initials of GAD, G-A-D. You have that, you have OCD, which I think we've talked about a little bit, obsessive compulsive disorder that we've talked about. And then there is a specific panic disorder, which I think we'll talk a little bit more later on about panic attacks, mm-hmm. PTSD, which again, we've covered. And then one that's called social anxiety, which I see a fair amount of, which is just that fear of being in large groups of people or fear of meeting someone new or fear of being judged or looked at critically. And that is hard for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a very common one. So those are the different types of anxiety disorders. As I was thinking about going into anxiety, I think it might be more helpful for our listeners if we talk about it in a more general way.
Yeah, I agree, because everyone is going to experience anxiety at some point in their life, just like everyone is going to experience something that's going to make them feel depressed or really sad, such as grief. And we know that just because you feel very sad doesn't necessarily mean you're depressed. You can go through an episode or a period of intense sadness, but it doesn't mean you have depression. And I think that a lot of people will say they're going to go through periods of anxiety, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they have a, what you might call GAD or generalized anxiety disorder. And I also want to acknowledge things like OCD. Now, OCD, and we've done an entire podcast episode on this, and that's kind of a different beast, I feel like.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah.
I don't want anyone who's listening and they have OCD and say, no, I do need anxiety medication. It helps calm me down. And I want to acknowledge that.
Right. I should certainly say with OCD, there are some medications that are really helpful.
Yes, which is kind of a different one. But for general anxiety, or, you know, someone who just, you know, ebbs and flows of life, like we talked about last week, you can't avoid stress. And I think there's going to be times when you can't avoid anxiety. And there are certainly incidences that might be more likely to induce anxiety. For example, public speaking. I know that's one that could induce anxiety. I know first-time parents, often experience.
Oh, I had that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I remember Curtis walking around with our newborn daughter, just listening to her breathe. And he was just so panicked and freaked out. Like, is she breathing okay? It sounds like she stopped breathing. And in a lot of ways, it's normal to feel all that anxiety because you have this tiny little thing that's 100% dependent on you. And your job is to keep it alive. And it does absolutely nothing for itself.
But by your third child, it's like, oh, well, yeah, they'll breathe. It's okay.
Yep. Yep. And Curtis, he made me promise to ask the doctor about it. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's kind of normal. And he's like, no, just please talk to the doctor. I'm really nervous about this. I said, okay. And the doctor was like, don't listen to your newborn breathe. They're not very good at it. Just don't listen to your newborn breathe. It's not going to do anything but stress you out. I promise you it's fine. Unless they're showing signs of respiratory distress, it's fine.
That reminded me of something I wanted to say a little bit earlier. The goal is not to get rid of anxiety. You can't get rid of anxiety entirely. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There will always be some stress. There will always be some anxiety. And I think the goal is either to learn how to manage it, first mm-hmm. and foremost. And I think that it's good to understand where this comes from. And I'm repeating myself from a past episode, but I'll say it again, that 10 to 20,000 years ago, mm-hmm. the people who lived on the savannah in Africa, the ones who were anxious about what was around them are the ones who survived.
Yeah.
The ones who were not anxious are the ones who did not survive because they got eaten by the lion. Mm-hmm. And so the anxiety, I think this is the right term from Darwin, it becomes natural selection, mm-hmm. that the people who are a little bit anxious are the ones who pass on those genes. So we come by it pretty honestly. The problem is our body is really geared to be anxious, except nowadays, most of us are not out on the savanna mm-hmm. with the lions. And there are other things that set us off and trigger us. And so the goal is not to get rid of the anxiety. You can't.
Yeah.
But you can learn to manage it.
Yes. So let's take a minute and talk about some of the times that anxiety is a good thing. And usually it's because it causes us to act. So the example you gave, when it comes time for a test, when you're in school, that anxiety is going to cause you to study. Or there are other times, another one that I'm thinking of is when, in the rare instances where I have to go outside at night alone.
Right.
I feel anxious. And in a way,
well, it helps you be more alert.
Exactly. Yes.
And so that is a positive. I agree with you.
Yes.
I think another one might be, it's a variation on social anxiety. See, a lot of these things like social anxiety is when it gets to be too big and it prevents us from going out. I think it's pretty normal. Like if we're going to go meet in a group of people we don't know, mm-hmm. I think it makes sense for us to be a little bit anxious about that. We don't know these people.
Yep.
And really it's the people who are too trusting, who have no anxiety. Those are typically the ones who get in trouble because they're too trusting. And so I think that a little bit of social anxiety makes sense. And so those are three different experiences where anxiety makes some sense. I think driving.
Yeah.
I was driving. We were driving at Christmas time. I had Lindy and all four grandkids. And I can't remember. It was dark. It was at night on a freeway. And I felt really anxious. But I thought, I've got to... it's like I've got all these people in this car.
And it made you more aware and cognizant.
Right. And so I really focus and I get intense in that moment, but I'd rather be intense in that moment and not have an accident than carefree. This is fine. It doesn't matter. And then have an accident. So I agree with you. There are times when anxiety makes sense.
Yeah. And then there are also times, like you said, where it's carried too far. So I have a good example of this, and I've shared this before, but I'll share it again for any of our listeners who are new. It was probably PTSD. It was relatively minor, though. So Curtis and I were driving down a freeway, and we spun off the road into the median. And, our daughter, our oldest daughter, she's about 6 weeks old at the time. And we spun off into the median and the car tipped onto two wheels and then tipped back onto four wheels. And it obviously that's pretty scary, you know, and it gave me a little bit of PTSD. And so how I felt that was whenever Curtis and I were driving and it snowed, and this lasted for probably several months, and it was snow, I would white knuckle everything in the car, because in my mind, that stop sign that's 10 feet away, we're going to crash into it. And that's how my anxiety felt, is we were going to hit everything and we were going to have another accident. Now, that wasn't rational and that wasn't normal, and I was able to move past it. And thankfully, Curtis was very patient with me. And when I would do that whole, you know, that gasping, that thing in the car that they say you're not supposed to do because it drives the driver nuts.
Right. Yeah.
Curtis is very patient. And, you know, and another thing, it also made me really, really anxious that Curtis was going to get into a car accident. And, you know, he was in college, and so he would keep kind of odd hours at school studying and everything. And sometimes I would just sit at home and I would just be really anxious, worrying, is he in a ditch somewhere? Did he crash? What's going on? And he was also very kind about that. And so he would text me whenever he got to somewhere, and then he would text me before he left. And I mean, I look back and I'm like, that sounds really, really controlling. But, you know, it was something that we both agreed. He was happy to do it temporarily to help ease my mind.
And I think that was certainly a sweet thing and a good thing for him to do, because I think it helped you get over that fear.
Yeah, it did. And around this time, I was also going through postpartum depression, which certainly didn't help matters. But I was able to, you know, talk it through with the counselor, and I was able to move past it. And, you know, now I can handle driving in the snow just fine. But there are times in our lives where I think we're going to feel some sort of, you know, anxiety. So let's switch gears now and talk about panic attacks. So one thing that's really scary about a panic attack is it, for a lot of people, it feels like they're having a heart attack. I've heard a lot of stories of someone who goes into the hospital thinking they're having a heart attack, and it turned out it was just a panic attack. So let's talk about that.
I used to know the stats on this. It's actually pretty high. The people who present in the ER for heart attacks where it's just stress related. And so here are the symptoms of a panic attack. And I'll talk about my own. I've had it twice, two panic attacks. So it's a panic attack is a very sudden surge in intense fear or discomfort that intensifies within minutes. So it's very fast. Someone suffering from a panic attack are going to have, may have some of these symptoms. So I think the most common one would be that increased heart rate, sweating and shaking, shortness of breath. Now, if you just take those two, I think we just described a heart attack in some ways, right?
And we've been told our entire lives, if you have these symptoms, go to the emergency room, right?
Chest pain is one, certainly. Yes. So you include chest pain. So I get it. I understand the reason people are afraid of that. But if you have that shortness of breath, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation, not a panic attack, where it's hard to get air. That is, and I think it's this inborn trait that we, you know, if our airway is obstructed in some way, or like even if you have a cold, it's hard to breathe, it's you can set off a panic attack just by that.
Yeah.
Chills, nausea, dizziness, numbness, fear of losing control or dying. And so, you know, those first ones that we mentioned, they are really about a heart that looks just like a heart attack.
Yeah.
And so, but I would never say to anyone, don't go to the ER.
Exactly.
I think you have to make sure you aren't having a heart attack.
Yes. Better safe than sorry.
But the other thing I would say is if you go and thinking you're having a heart attack and you have a panic attack, after the fact, do something about it. Seek some help, seek some therapy. You know, figure out what's going on with that caused you to go into the panic attack. So here's the time I experienced it. And this was a long time ago. I was studying for my licensure exam. So it was a big ticket thing for me. You know, I, of course, wanted to pass my licensure exam. And then we were on vacation, and at the time I was a scuba diver. So I get on the boat and the whole family's out there and we're going down. We're getting in the water. And I don't know if there was something wrong. You know, maybe it was just the stress I was under. It could be a restriction in the air. I was breathing the air, but I couldn't get enough air. And so there I was under the water, not getting enough air, and I panicked, and it was it was big. And I probably shot up to the top, because you aren't supposed to shoot up to the top,
right?
You know, very quickly. That can be dangerous. But boy, when you feel like you aren't getting enough air, you aren't thinking. And so, you know, I got into the boat, I calmed myself down, and I've never been in the water diving again. That's how
interesting.
That's how extreme it was. I just didn't want to ever experience that. In a lot of ways, I'm glad I experienced it, because then when people come in and say, that there are some people who have panic attacks often.
Yes.
And I can empathize with them. And it's really awful. It really is awful. Because you know, you might feel like you can't get enough air, or you know, you're going to die. And that is a very real feeling in the moment. So,
I've experienced a panic attack once in my life, and it was shortly after starting, ironically, the anxiety and depression medication that had been prescribed to me for postpartum depression. And I remember reading through the brochure of possible side effects. And when I told the therapist about this, he's like, yeah, lawyers write those. Don't read those. He's like, that's just to cover their bases in case it does happen.
You will die if you take this medicine. That's
the way it sounds. But legally, they have to. And again, not that it can't happen, and not to mitigate anyone that it has happened to. So I had just taken it for the first time. And all of a sudden, I just started to feel anxious, or I got the sense that something is wrong. I didn't know what, but something was wrong. And the interesting thing about a panic attack is you start spiraling. Like, you think, okay, something feels wrong. And so you start to think, okay, well, maybe there is something wrong. And it's just this downward spiral that you can't get yourself out of until you're full blown panicking. And so I wouldn't say it was too severe. You know, it left me pretty emotionally drained, but I've never had one since. And for me, very, very fortunately, my anxiety, I mean, I've struggled with some anxiety in the past, but I've only had one panic attack in my life. And since experiencing it, fortunately for me, I've been able to talk myself out of it. Every time I've started feeling like I'm getting to that point, I've been able to say, okay, this is just anxiety. Or, you know, I've been able to logic myself out of it, if that makes sense, which I realize that that doesn't work for everyone.
I think it's actually pretty hard to do for most people, because you have to figure out a way to change the physiology. Let me just, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I'm going to say something about medication again, because I know I make generalized statements. I get that, and I tend to be anti-med. But with panic attacks, I think there are some things that a doctor can give you that will help you get out of it.
Yes. And,
but it's not going to be the antidepressant, because that's not immediately acting. But there are some immediate acting anxiolytics that they can prescribe. And if you can be sure that you're able to regulate how you take them, and you only take them when you're having that panic attack and you feel like you can't come out of it, then I think the medication is really helpful.
Right. And there are certainly people who have panic attacks so often to the point that it's very disruptive to many aspects of their life. And so I think that if someone can maybe feel a panic attack going on and take something to help prevent it, or at least shorten it, you know, I think that's a positive thing.
If we go back, it's that generalized anxiety. And if you're trying to take medication to change that, I would look at your life and figure out what's going, which is something I wanted to cover really briefly, if that's okay right now.
Yeah.
But I think that medication, it certainly will help you calm down, but it doesn't change the context of your life at all. And I think there is almost always a reason that, you know, people are anxious and they have trouble looking at their life or seeing where that can change. I've mentioned this book before. It's called Lost Connections by Johann Hari. And the question is, why is there such an increase in, he lumps depression, anxiety together, but he's, you know, certainly talking about anxiety. But I don't think we can talk about anxiety with talking about the context in which we live our lives. And there's a fair amount of insecurity. Now, if you just think about the pandemic for the last, well, we're coming on the last 2 years, we're going on to our third year now, that, you know, a lot of people have lost some hope. I mean, I remember back in 2020, people were saying this will be over by March. Do you remember that? This will be over by summer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've got COVID fatigue, mm-hmm. and we start to feel anxious about the future. You know, when does this end? I think that there are a lot of people in our country and probably throughout the world who suffer from, say, food insecurities or housing insecurities.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine that in our country anyway, we don't have a good social net to help people. You know, it's different in other countries. They have better social programs. But mm-hmm. I think that people are rightfully anxious.
Yeah.
Because of the context of their lives.
Yeah.
And if we want that to change, if we want to help people, we have to think more culturally mm-hmm. about what we can do to change the context of our culture to make it less anxiety provoking. I mean, that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to bring that up. That book, I would suggest, I love that book. I think it's mm-hmm. really helpful. Lost Connections by Johan Hari.
I will have that book linked in our show notes. At least I'll have the title and author in there. And I want to take this opportunity too to recognize the skyrocketing of anxiety and depression since the pandemic yes. began. And yeah. and there's a lot of reasons for that, valid right. reasons. There's many, many people who have underlying health concerns to be very concerned about catching COVID. And for a lot of people, the isolation was hard. That was the hardest part for me. I really yeah. struggled with yeah. the isolation of the pandemic. And so, but it may feel like this pandemic is going to last forever, but eventually it will come to an end. And so I think, you know, in some ways we have to just hang tight.
I'm pretty hopeful that we're nearing the end of it because of the way the virus is mutating. But you're right, the pandemic has been very hard.
So to wrap up, I want to briefly go back to panic attacks. And if someone you know is having a panic attack, and we talked about this last week, and if you feel helpless or like you don't know what to do, first, I want to acknowledge that there's maybe not necessarily a whole lot you can do besides remain calm yourself, first and foremost, right. don't get worked up. And then the second thing is just try to, they call it grounding. And so try right. to ground them. Right. So have them focus on their breathing or have them focus on something external or something that they can control. Panic attacks are often a result of a loss of control. You feel a complete right. loss of control.
So my first choice would be the breathing.
Yes.
In past episodes, people know how important I think the breathing is. So if you're with someone, because often if you're experiencing the panic attack, it's really hard for you to gain control of your breath. But if you have someone there mm-hmm. who can, you know, hold your hand gently and then help you focus on the breath. I mean, in a lot of ways, it reminds me of what I did with one of our bursts, the Lamaze method, which is okay. all about breathing and yep. focus. Mm-hmm. You know, Lindy's in labor. It's really painful. And I'm there helping her as the coach. And it's all about someone guiding you. You change the way you're breathing. So I agree with you. You know, the grounding, I agree with that term. But I think one of the best ways to get grounded is to really focus on that breath and start to change the breath.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I want to reiterate remaining calm, because if you get worked up and say, oh, you're having a panic attack. You're having a panic attack. Okay, here.
That's not going to be that helpful.
No, it's not. It's just going to make them more anxious because all of a sudden they're wondering, why are you panicking about this?
Right.
So, I mean, right. just be very calm and remind them that their breathing is something that we can work
they
together
can
to change.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
They can control it.
Yes, give them something other than this heightened sense of emotion to focus on, right. and then just ride it out with them. Really, mm-hmm. that's another big thing, is it's going to take time for their anxiety level to go from 10 plus back yeah. down to normal. Yeah. So just be there, calm, and ride it out with them.
And be patient, because it's very real to them.
It is.
You know, having had that, I acknowledge it feels awful and it feels out of control.
Yeah. And to them, that's their current reality. So don't ever try to downplay it. You yeah. know, validate, yeah. definitely validate. We talk all the time about validation. So validate and acknowledge, I can see how stressed, I can see how anxious you feel. Let me try to help you regulate your breathing, or let me try to help you find something else to focus on.
Yeah. I'd like to make a final comment, though, that I just thought of. And that is, so we talk about exercise, meditation, and sleep, and those are really important. I also urge listeners if they have anxiety, to look at their lives, look at the context of their lives and examine it and think about what can I change that's going to decrease the level of stress or anxiety. Mm-hmm. And often I see this in my office all the time. People are very reluctant to make those changes.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we need. Mm-hmm. And I make it clear to them, you aren't going to have less anxiety unless you change something.
Yep.
So let's work on what can you change.
Yeah.
So it's all about the hard choices we have to make. But again, look at the context of your life and see what you might be able to change.
Absolutely. Perfect way to end. And before that, I have an exciting announcement. Our podcast is finally available on Apple Podcasts. I have been trying for months to get it to work, and it finally did. So if you are an avid Apple lover and you want to continue listening to us on Apple Podcasts, that is now available. So next week, we're going to get into abusive relationships. It's going to be a good one. It'll be an intense one, probably a very sobering one, but a good one. See you all next week.
Have a question for Dr. Burton? How about a topic you'd like us to cover? Send us an email at mentalhealthpod21@gmail.com. This podcast was produced and edited by Liz Lang. Music is by Audio Lounge.